the type of practice that I carried on would not be possible today.
Why is that?
Because it's a specialized field today. I mean, if I'm, in old days I represented a corporation, all I had to do was attend to drawn up contracts and minutes and so forth. Today, you represent a corporation, you have to know labor law, you have to know offshore law, you have to know environmental law, you have to know all kinds of different laws. So it's almost impossible for one man to keep up with that. So it's,
law has become more complicated.
That's right.
Well, tell me about the legal community in the 30s and the 40s in Pittsburgh. What type of firms were there? What were the big firms?
Well, the big firm, two big firms were Richmond and Shaw McClay, which is in existence today.
Mm-hmm.
It's the biggest firm.
About how many lawyers did it have?
I would only guess maybe 65, 70. Okay. They probably have 400 now. I'm just guessing on that.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't close to the big firms. And there was Smith, Buchanan, Scott, and Ingersoll, which is also divided into two or three other concerns. They were the two big law firms.
Mm-hmm.
And there were some outstanding trial lawyers, individuals like Roddy Marshall, Ben Paul Brasley, a Jewish man, was an outstanding lawyer.
How do you spell his last name?
B-R-A-S-L-E-Y. And H. Fred Mercer and Oliver K. Eaton, these were outstanding lawyers at the time.
Mm-hmm. Was there... Comparing lawyering in the 30s and 40s to today, how do you feel, aside from the specialization, how do you feel the fraternity of lawyering is different, if at all? The feeling among lawyers or, you know, the practice.
Well, I don't know much about it, but I think there was a bigger spirit of comradeship in those days. I think today law business is primarily a business, not a profession, that's all.
Mm-hmm.
They work with computers, you know, to figure out what the fee would be and everything like that is concerning. If they call up, why, they have a computer, they charge $15 for the call or something like that. I've never practiced that way. I just weigh the case and figure out what I should charge.
Mm-hmm. So
I'd go bankrupt if I practiced that way.
Practicing law during the Depression, were there problems in...
Sure there were. There were problems. You couldn't even collect a fee then.
Mm-hmm.
I had a batch of bills like that, and one lawyer said, I kept on sending out the bills. The lawyer said to me, don't do that. They'll never come back to you. Send the bill to them, mark paid in full, and they'll come back because they don't want to pay the bills, that's all. And I would say 50% of the people for whom I gave an amnesty on their bill, they came back. They couldn't, Depression was terrible, they couldn't pay anything at all.
Mm-hmm.
We had no unemployment benefits then, no Social Security, and there was a limited amount of welfare, but it was really very rough.
Were your clients, where did you draw your clients from?
Well, I'd say draw my clients in the main from the area which I was born, Southside.
Then where where was your office?
Downtown in the Burger Building, where the there's a vacant lot right across from the City County Building, later in the Frick Building. But then after I became active at the Y, I picked up a Jewish clientele, too.
When was that? When did you start becoming active at the Y?
About 1926, after I graduated from law school.
Mm-hmm.
I was on the board there for a short time, and a secretary for a short time. Then I decided that I'd go back to the South Side and begin to pick up some business, because I was devoting too much time to pro bono public affairs. So, I discontinued being active at the Y. I picked up quite a few clients from my association there. I would say that my clientele is about 60% non-Jewish and 40% Jewish, that's all.
Mm-hmm.
I represented Greeks, Albanians, Mexicans, Italians, Polish. Name me a type that you can think of I might not have represented.
You became an assistant DA, you said, from 42 to 48. Was that a full-time job?
Practically, but not. I was able to handle some law, my law business on the side, too, but very low.
Where was the office located?
District Attorney's Office?
Yes.
In the courthouse building, the same place it's located today.
How many attorneys were there in the office?
I think there were about 15 or 16 attorneys there. Now they have 150, I think.
Was your caseload that much smaller than the caseload is today?
Well, I'm not in a position to judge, but we didn't have discovery and interrogatories and motions to quash evidence and so forth like we do today. Mm-hmm. See, the law in Pennsylvania was that if you got evidence illegally, it was still admissible in evidence. Mm-hmm. If you went into a place and got the evidence without a search warrant, it was still admissible. The courts held you could use that to discredit the party, but that did not prevent it from being admissible. The law has now changed on that.
Was there a lot of police misconduct, illegal evidence obtaining in those days, as you recall?
No, not anymore than today, no.
What kind of cases did you handle as an assistant DA?
I was assigned to specialize in racket investigations, prosecution of lotteries. Mm-hmm. And I handle that practically exclusively.
Then you said you were also a deputy attorney general.
Yeah, I was a deputy attorney general for about a year, during which we conducted several investigations of public officials in Allegheny County.
Mm-hmm. When was that?
I think that was about 1950. Mm-hmm.
Did any of those investigations result in indictments?
Yeah, some did, but I retired voluntarily because one of the persons to be investigated had been inducted into, without naming him, into ODK with me, mm-hmm. and I felt that I didn't want to be a party to an investigation of a man whom I knew personally. Mm-hmm. My then boss, whoever it was, name's immaterial, he said he'd investigate his brother. I said, well, that's different. You're different than I am. I don't want to be a part of that. So I retired from the investigation voluntarily.
Okay, from there you went back to private practice?
Private practice until 1954 when I ran for state legislature and I won in 54, 56, 58, 60, and 62. And I became a workman's compensation referee for a short time. And then up until 1970, for about 5 years, I was a member of the Unemployment Compensation Board of Review in Harrisburg.
And while you were in the legislature, what district did you represent?
Squirrel Hill, this district, which was a Democratic in registration, but I'm a Republican.
Mm-hmm. During this time when you were involved in Squirrel Hill, and was it a growing community? I mean, can you characterize the community? Has it changed much?
Well, it was more... South of Four was mainly Jewish. Mm-hmm. North of Four was mainly non-Jewish. Mm-hmm. And we didn't have any Asians here at all. We had practically no colored people here at all. Mm-hmm. It was homogeneous. On a holiday at South of Four, brother, the whole town was dead middle of South of Four. That's all. In the districts in which I would live, I would say the populations would be 95% Jewish. Squirrel is a big ward, and there were more Gentiles in the ward than there were Jews even then.
Do you feel that Squirrel Hill has changed much over the years?
Well, it surely has. I think it's deteriorated myself.
In what way?
Well, you look at South of Forbes, you look at Murray Avenue down there. Are you familiar with it?
Yeah, well, tell us about it.
Does it look to you like an outstanding area?
Well, how was it let's say, in the 40s or the 50s?
Well, there was we had restaurants there. We had the Weinstein's restaurant. We had Abrams and Friedman. We had a Weinstein's restaurant at the corner of Beacon and Murray. Miss Levant would know about it. It was an outstanding restaurant. Mm-hmm. And the Marfield Apartments was considered high class. Mm-hmm. The apartments, the Wendover Apartments, were considered high grade. The buildings have deteriorated, that's all. Mm-hmm. And Squirrel Hill has become higher, more and more a senior citizen area. Mm-hmm. The ratio of population, I would say, we're almost on a par with Miami Beach for senior citizens south of Forest. Mm-hmm. Where do you live?
A little north of Forest.
Yeah, what street do you live on?
On Beechwood.
Beechwood, out towards Fifth Avenue.
Right, mm-hmm. Just the other side of Forest.
But that area has still maintained its standard, you see. Mm-hmm. It's not deteriorated.
Well, what do you think has created the change? The lack of restaurants, or, you know,
talking
about Weinstein's?
Well, I think a lot of people migrated here in order to better themselves. People came from downtown. And certain areas like Darlington Road and Bartlett Street, joining Murray Avenue, became illegal apartment buildings. You know, there are people living in five and six families living in apartments, mm-hmm. where there used to be one family living there. Now, that naturally deteriorates a neighborhood.
Okay. You mentioned that you were on the board of the YMHA.
Yeah.
About what years was that?
Oh, I'm guessing probably about 28, 29, and 30, I'm not sure.
Who was on the board with you at that time?
Edgar J. Kaufman, who was the angel of the Y, and Hyman Rogel, an insurance man, A.M. Oppenheimer, a steel man, and other people whose name I can't recall.
How did you get elected to the board?
By the vote of the membership.
I mean, was that something you decided you wanted to get on and you got voted on, or someone asked you?
Oh, it's an old political story. I represented the rebels. We figured that these people were not around the Y, and we were going to get recognition. Mm-hmm. And we put up a candidate whose name I don't remember, and we elected him. Mm-hmm. And he turned out to be a weak sister, and he decided not to run. The powers that be said, okay, we're going to give you recognition. The rebels can select a man. And I was selected by the rebels, and that's how I became a member of the board. That's all. Mm.
What, as the rebels, as the leader of the rebels, well, what was your focus on the board?
Well, I was a believer in the YMHA being for young people. Mm-hmm. And I never felt that the YMHA should be a glorified bathhouse person. And where people would pay a higher price to go, you know, similar to a bathhouse, and mm-hmm. they still continue it. I thought that wasn't the function of the Y. If somebody wanted to go to an auditorium or get a steam bath, that was a luxury he could get from a private industry, that's all. But the Jewish Community Center is going to carry on. They're going to have steam baths for people, and that I don't think is part of the function of the Y.
The Y building in Oakland, do you know when it was built?
It was completed about 1925.
Were you involved with the Y before the building was
built?
No,
I wasn't.
Was there a Y before the building?
Oh, sure. There was one down on various locations in Upper Fifth Avenue, Pittsburgh, yeah.
And Mr. Kaufman was mainly responsible for the
building? I would think so, yeah. He was in there. And the other men, the other industrialists I mentioned, like the Lehman Brothers and from Blaw & Ox, and Mr. Frank from United Engineering, A.M. Oppenheimer from Apollo Steel, and these other people. The principal angels were not Orthodox Jews, they were German Jews. They, as I indicated to you, they picked out the location there with malice aforethought. They wanted the Y to be located in the Civic Center, and their dreams have been abandoned.
Were there other organizations that you were active in before World War II?
No, no.
How about during the war, after the war? Well, clearly you were involved with politics.
Well, I got active in my, in the political affairs of my war, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a district leader, and as I had told you that time before, the Democrats were a non-entity. We had about 600 voters in my district and maybe two Democrats. And I was part of the Republican organization that time. I was a worker.
Let's finish up by talking a little bit about Pittsburgh during these different time periods. You've really gone through some very major changes with Pittsburgh.
Well, Pittsburgh has become Pittsburgh at that time was called the Smoky City. We had people who they said got ill because of the smoke and so forth,
mm-hmm.
but they had jobs. Now we have a glorified city and no jobs. It's not entirely due to smoke abatement, but it's due to other conditions.
Mm-hmm. Pittsburgh before World War I. How was the smoke on the south side? What was it like?
Well, it could, on a day when the smoke coming out of the mills, it looked like it would blot out the sun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And what about the unions, unionizing activities during these periods?
Well, the unions were beginning to get up. When I was 1919, the great steel strike of 1919 was organized by William Z. Foster.
Mm-hmm.
He closed all the mills and steel mills. William Z. Foster was a communist who later migrated to Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And the unions were held in check, except for the unions in the building trades. The unions were very weak in Pittsburgh. And with the advent of Roosevelt and the Wagner Labor Relations Law, then the unions became powerful.
Mm-hmm.
So it swung from a lack of power to overbearing power. Now the unions are beginning to get weak again, so because of their overbearing attitude.
During Prohibition, were there speakeasies around?
Oh, sure, there were thousands of speakeasies all over.
How did it work to get into a speakeasy around here?
If you knew the man, you got in, that's all. If you didn't know him, you didn't get in. I remember some of the people at the Y, they wanted to go to a speakeasy. They were all highfalutin people.
Mm-hmm.
He said, can you get us into a speakeasy? I said, sure, come on, I'll get you into a speakeasy. Some were very high class places, you know, former clubs and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And others were dives, that's all. And the average speakeasy in a district was allocated to the political followers. If you were okay, you could run the speakeasy. If you weren't okay, then you couldn't run the speakeasy, that's all. And also at that time, there might have been, we had constables, they were got their fair share, that was the license fees. Instead of paying the state $1,500 license fee, they paid the constable maybe $10 or $15 a month or something like that.
Mm-hmm. How did people, where did the liquor come from? Was it transported in or was it made
well,
here?
Some of it was legitimate liquor out of bonded warehouses.
Mm-hmm.
Other was moonshine made by the people. And the moonshine was sometimes of such a character that people became blind. You know, it wasn't made properly. It was wood alcohol used.
Mm-hmm.
But
a little bit about after World War II, in the Renaissance period in Pittsburgh, were you at all involved?
No.
With that?
No, I wasn't involved. No. That was made possible by Dick Mellon, who was the man.
Mm-hmm.
The Mellons decided to. There was an alliance between the Republican businessmen and the Democratic politicians, which alliance still exists today.
Mm-hmm.
The Republican businessmen figure it's easier to get what they want from the Democrats at a lower price than to get it from the Republicans. So the Republican Party in Allegheny County is dead because of this alliance between a big business and the Democratic Party. Without Mr. Mellon, Gateway Center and the Renaissance would have been a nonentity. You couldn't do it without him, because he furnished the financial backing, and he also furnished the backing to get the bills passed in Harrisburg, which would make it possible.
Mm-hmm. What kind of legislation was there needed to do that?
Well, you had to have condemnation in some places, you see, and public, some was an authority, some lot of land was built by an authority,
mm-hmm.
which I thought was unconstitutional. Condemnation, eminent domain, is for the purpose of taking land for a public purpose. Authorities were established and they went ahead and condemned land and leased it to private people. That is a perversion of the law of eminent domain.
Is the land still owned publicly?
No, it's owned by authorities, some of it.
By the authorities?
The Gateway Towers is owned, the Gateway Center is owned by Equitable Life Insurance Society, you see. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the land is leased from the authority?
No, I think they own the land absolutely now.
About when did the Renaissance conclude? When was Gateway built and the land cleared?
I'm not familiar with that at all.
What was the attitude of the people at the time towards the reconstruction, the construction and tearing down of the houses in the area?
Well, it was all right, and but there were some very bad mistakes made. For example, when they had the Renaissance for the Lower Hill District,
mm-hmm.
where the arena is and other places like that are located,
mm-hmm.
They wiped out the residents of thousands of black people. They had no place to go. So they scattered all over the city and we created problems, you understand. Now, they never should have made that move unless they had made a prior move to whereby they could locate these people.
Who were the outstanding political figures of the before the war period now?
Which war?
Before the Second World War.
Well, David Lawrence was an outstanding political figure in Allegheny County,
mm-hmm.
on the Democratic side, and Jim Malone was the outstanding figure on the Republican side.
Mm-hmm.
And before Roosevelt was around, Joseph G. Armstrong, who was a neighbor of mine, was the leader of the Republican Party.
So he was from the South Side?
Yeah.
Has the nature of getting ahead in politics changed, do you feel? You became active. How did you get active in the political arena?
Well, I decided to become active up here. I became a district committeeman, and I became a secretary of the party, and I was made speeches on behalf of the party, and then I decided to be a candidate.
Mm-hmm.
And although I was Jewish, and the bulk of the registration of the Republican Party was Gentile, they always nominated me without opposition after my first term.
In general, in Pittsburgh, how do you feel being Jewish affected a person living in Pittsburgh throughout this whole time period? Was there much discrimination?
I don't think so.
Did you find any at all?
I can only speak for myself.
Yes.
I had no problem. I was admitted to societies that other Jews had never been admitted to. They claimed that they used to tell me, "What, you're going to be fooling around with a Pitt Weekly? You're never going to get anywhere. You're Jewish."
Mm-hmm.
I said, "I'll try it." I never had any problem at all.
To what do you attribute that to?
Oh, I don't want to make an egotistical statement, but I was the most competent one there.
Right.
I was a professional newspaper man working on a college newspaper. The other people couldn't compete with me, that's all.
But something I didn't ask you about was your high school. It was Southside High School, you said?
Yeah, I'm Southside High School.
And you were there what years, do you remember?
From 15 to 19. And I was the first joiner graduated that school. As a result of which I got a small scholarship. I loved Latin. They don't teach Latin in schools anymore.
They're starting to do it again. Yes. Yeah.
You know your Latin?
Not me, unfortunately. I'm just in the in between period. But both my boys take it. Were there other people in your high school that became prominent later on that you might recall?
Well, it's hard for me to recall some of the people. Some became prominent. I had a very small graduating class, only 26 people, as you know. Not like there is today, 800 people in a graduating class. Mm-hmm. We were a small high school, very small high school.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the people in my class were children of steel workers, you see,
mm-hmm.
and a couple of merchants.
And you were able, what was taught at the high school level in those days?
Well, we taught basic English and Latin, geometry, algebra, chemistry, physics, which I didn't take. These were the basics. German. I studied German there during World War I. I had only two people in that class because of the prejudice against Germany during World War I.
Mm-hmm.
One was the daughter of the German evangelical church and myself. So we got A's because we were the only two who had the guts to take German during that time.
How many people went to college, do you think?
Small percentage, I'd say, but less than 10 or 15%, very small. Today, I would imagine, I'm guessing again, 75% go to college.
From grade school?
Parenthetically, I don't think a great number of the people are qualified to be college students. Mm-hmm. They shouldn't be going.
From grade school to high school, how many, did everyone go off to high school?
No. A lot of them, as soon as they graduated grade school at the age of 15, 16, or 17, went to work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was a different climate completely, you see.
And within your family, did all your brothers and sisters go to high school?
Everyone went to high school, yeah.
And how many went to college?
Five went to college.
Quite a few. Did economically, did the older ones help the younger ones go through, or was your father able to do that pretty much on his own?
Just struggling and went along, yeah. I saw.
In general, to sum up, is there anything that we haven't asked you that you feel would be of interest you'd like to cover?
Nothing much at all. I think people are living beyond their means now, you know, and the day of reckoning is going to come sooner or later. I don't think the people understand the value of a dollar. They don't work for it, some of them. And I look very skeptically upon rock items where young people spend $15, $25, and $30 to see some jerk playing on a guitar. So I'm like the one horse shay. I'm falling apart, that's all. Mm-hmm. I've lived too long.
Yeah, there's never such a thing. Well, how did you entertain yourself when you were, people entertained themselves when you were teenagers? When you were a teenager and a young person, instead of going to a rock concert for $35, what was it that you did do?
Well, I went to sports events. I maybe went to a local dance hall for a quarter or something like that, which were all dance halls were all sedate and conducted properly. And I went to the movies were very, very active in those days because you didn't have radio on television.
Mm-hmm.
And the downtown Penn where Heinz is located and the Stanley where the Benedum Center was located were outstanding movies, and I had acts at that time. And we had in Pittsburgh maybe two legitimate theaters, the Alvin and the Nixon, and four or five burlesque houses, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how people enjoy themselves. I went to the Blessed House once in a while. Mm-hmm. One of my friends was a publicity agent for the Blessed House. He worked with me in a tri-state. He became the press agent for a Blessed House. And he originated a slogan, "Ladies, bring your husbands."
Was there much petty crime going on?
There was crime going on. A lot of crime created because of necessity. People stole because they had to. And I don't think there was as much organized crime as there is today, that's all. The dollar rewards of drugs and so forth are beyond my reckoning, so they've created a lot of problems, that's all.
Okay, Marion?
How do you feel about, I'm asking you a question, how do you feel about the catering to people who have AIDS? I don't call them people having AIDS, I call them perverts, that's all they are. They're not in trouble because of accidents, they're in trouble by malice aforethought, they created their own problems, that's all.
Oh.
But that's a matter of probably... the lower generation, and not the lower, the younger generation, doesn't agree with me.
Different opinions on many matters.
That's right.
Our purpose is to get your background, your history. Then.